This is the radio industry's very own radio station. 24/7 in radio.
Hello, and welcome to Third Sector on In Radio. I'm Dom. In this edition of the programme, my community radio tour heads to the East Country. And on my usual mission of discovery to learn more about the benefits of community broadcasting all over the UK, I find myself in a part of the country that has a particular set of challenges.
Sheerness in particular is an area of multiple deprivation. So you have high unemployment, you have low skills, you have a lack of training. Yes, it's a very impoverished area. So we work with the community and we focus mostly on health and well-being because we're part of Sheppey Matters, which is a large charity. All of their projects are about health and well-being. So our shows are dedicated to local health support groups.
That's Julie Nichols, who's the manager of Sheppey FM, and we'll be hearing a lot more from her as we get into the programme. For on this occasion, the community radio tour has pitched up in the town of Sheerness on the Isle of Sheppey. And what a fascinating part of the world that is. We'll not only be finding out about the amazing things that the community broadcaster Sheppey FM is up to, but also why there is a need locally for some of the services that it provides. I have a great conversation with Julie, but I also meet some of the other volunteers at Sheppey, including Jack B, who was one of the winners of the Community Radio Awards that we celebrated in September. I also meet Noel Pritchard. I'm smiling already because he was such a lovely guy. And through these conversations, I find out quite a lot about what's going on in Sheerness and indeed the Isle of Sheppey. And to complement that, I also found myself talking to the local parish priest of the Catholic Church, which is located very nearby the studios of Sheppey FM. As it happens, I was making two completely different programmes when I was there. But when Julie was telling me all about life in Sheerness, I thought I would take the opportunity to ask the parish priest, who's Canon Francis Moran, a little bit about the community around the church and the people he serves, which is all really interesting. First up, though, it's an old friend of the programme. Old in the sense of established, of course. And many of us were gathering there because of the Radio Hub, which is so good at bringing community and grassroots broadcasters together. Wheel him in, then.
Hello, I'm Danny Lawrence from the Radio Hub. So we've had a successful Radio Hub today with Paul Chandler, who specialises in workshops, in legal compliance, defamation, etc., followed by a couple of other presentations. We had a good old day in Sheerness. Hosts were Sheppey FM, and it's been a nice, enjoyable day with radio stations, 21 stations representatives, and around 50 people who have descended upon the Isle of Sheppey. Some have actually arrived because they've come a long way. They've actually turned up on Friday, staying till Sunday, like yourself, Dom.
These events are getting more and more popular. What is it about them that there's a kind of need that you're fulfilling?
When we originally started, it was just going to be for the south, southeast, but obviously, as you just said, it's grown. And I think the need is because no one else is actually doing this kind of thing. And I think because of that, more and more people, once they've been to one, they actually like the networking, they actually like seeing other stations, how they work, and they like, obviously, like today, the workshop. So I think there's a need, and the different themes that we do, each time we do a different, you know, this theme that we've done today, we actually did last year, but we brought it back because people have actually said, actually, we'd like to see it again. Plus, some of our people who haven't been would like to go. But also, when we do other areas, we actually find that there's new stations who opt in and opt out, which is great. So I think there's a need for it, and I'm just thrilled that we can all come together and have a bit of fun and be serious at the same time.
So just remind ourselves of the themes coming up over the sort of next three sessions.
Well, we've got education and trainings coming up, and we're doing a networking day going to be in Sittingbourne in March, involving the local hospice there and encouraging community radio stations, if they don't already do any work with a local hospice, how they can get involved in that. So we're going to be networking there. And then we've got another one coming up in Sheffield, which is going to be the Paul Chandler Day again for northern stations to take part. And then one with yourself down in the southwest, which I think is going to be wrapped around education or training and some description. So brilliant stuff. And it's all different things. We had a real good one when we did an engineering day, and that was a real big success when we did that at Luton at Radio Lab. We even got Ofcom on board when we did the networking day at Baldock, the monitoring centre. So you know, everyone wanted to be a part of it, and it's great that we can come together on days like this.
If anyone wants to know more about the Radio Hub, where do they go?
They can email me, DannyLawrence@gateway978.com, because it's linked to a radio station. And we've also got the Radio Hub website, which is theradiohub.co.uk.
Hi, my name is Julie Nichols. I am the project manager for Sheppey Community Media Centre, which is the home of Sheppey FM. And we got our FM licence this April, so we are now Sheppey FM 92.2.
I travel around the country. This interview, this visit today, is part of my community radio tour. As you approach a community radio station, all sorts of things are going through my mind. Actually, everyone I've been to, over 50 of them so far, is different. But approaching your building here is a very unique setting, and immediately the visitor is put into a place where they think they are going to a very engaging organisation. Tell me about this building.
I found this building in 2008 and it was totally derelict. It is owned by our local Swellborough Council, and I say very neglected. It took me a couple of years. I just looked at it and thought that needs to be a community radio station because it's so in the heart of the Sheerness town and the community around us. So it took a long time, 2 or 3 years, but we had an awful lot of support from local businesses and things. You know, we started off as a community internet station, but we always acted and behaved in the way professionally that an FM station should. And we built up a clientele, we built up networks with the local groups and organisations. We got a very, very good reputation. So getting the FM licence was just that cherry on the icing on the cake. But everybody here just loves what they do.
And I'm going to come on to that. And that's very clear, actually, because I spent a large part of yesterday with you and a number of other people here. But I just want to stay with the building for a second, because I think it's a wonderful, it's sort of, I don't know, an Art Deco design or something from maybe between the wars. It's a reflection of a past glory. But also what you've told me is that it's about a rejuvenation, isn't it?
Yes. The building was actually built in 1924. And originally, it was very much a leisure area around here. This was a bowls pavilion, or a bowling green and pavilion. And originally, before we had the monstrous sea defence wall built behind us, this building, there's three rooms, and each room had great big French doors that went on to literally straight onto the beach and the promenade. It must have been stunning in its day. And also in this area, there was a bandstand where people would circle it with their deck chairs and listen to the bands every Sunday. There was a beautiful pavilion where there was live entertainment. But unfortunately, over the years, something to do with Swellborough Council, they moved away from tourism to sort of commercial, industrial, and then they expanded the docks and we had a steel mill. The idea to bring in more revenue, more jobs, which did work for a while until there was like a recession and then everything closed. Now they are looking at going back to raising tourism again on the island because it is a beautiful island. So we are here. The building itself is stunning and we love it. It's got its big columns out the front and its flat roof, and you can go up and look at Southend and Whitstable. It's beautiful and put back to community use, which is what's really great for the building.
Yeah, I mean, I use the term rejuvenation, but regeneration, really. It's a fantastic ethic of your project here. Now, community radio stations are, to a very large extent, the sum total of what a community is prepared to put together to give itself a voice. Tell me, and you've already touched on this, but tell me about the culture here on the Isle of Sheppey in Sheerness, and what are the challenges that hopefully your project here is trying to help resolve?
The Isle of Sheppey and Sheerness in particular is an area of multiple deprivation. So you have high unemployment, you have low skills, you have a lack of training. Yes, it's a very impoverished area. So we work with the community and we focus mostly on health and well-being because we're part of Sheppey Matters, which is a large charity. All of their projects are about health and well-being. So our shows are dedicated to local health support groups. So you may have had a stroke, or you may have or know of somebody that's had swell fibromyalgia. And so we work with those support groups. where people can go and get help. And that's another way of nurturing the island. We work with lots of local organisations to promote their activities. And one thing about the island is that there is a very strong community spirit here. If something goes wrong, there was a fire in the building along Marine Parade and people were made homeless and everybody got together. They put on gigs to raise money. They're very quick to come forward and support other people in the community. And that's a strength. I think maybe it's an island mentality, but there's a strong community spirit here. And I think that's also why we're quite well supported as well, because the community knows we're here for them as well.
In radio, radio.
And it's at this point of my conversation with Julie, I'm just going to take time out for a second to bring in another conversation I had whilst in Sheerness that weekend. And that's with Canon Francis Moran. One day I'd love to just make a programme on the links between the various community hubs, including the broadcasters, the churches and the pubs. Maybe that latter one will be a rather longer broadcast. We'll have to wait and see. Meanwhile, here's how the conversation went with the local parish priest. How long have you been the parish priest here?
16 years.
Tell me about the community around the church here.
We've got a very friendly community. You've probably noticed at Mass today. And they just want to be part of the parish. They're proud to be part of this is their parish, and they like to take an active part. You notice we got a lot of Polish parishioners here as well. In fact, one Sunday I was, as I normally stand outside shaking hands with people, leave the church, and I counted 22 nationalities at Mass here on one Sunday. 22. Yeah.
What does that tell you then about who's living here in Sheerness and why they're here?
A very diverse population, and it's hard to know why they're here, because the docks have closed, steelworks closed down. The docks and the prison now seem to be the biggest employers on the island. Peel ports in the docks, and we've got three prisons on the island. We've got a lot of staff who are working in the prison, either prison officers or admin staff, you know. So even I work in the prison 3 days a week.
What do you do in the prison?
I'm part-time Cathy chaplain to the open prison, and my job is to interview prisoners and to do services for them. I do Mass for them every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. We have rosary and prayers with them on a Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock, and generally to befriend prisoners. And in fact, I have a prisoner here who works for me every day. There's a scheme in the prison called the Working Out Scheme, and people who are coming up for parole are allowed to work outside the prison, and I've got a prisoner working for me Tuesday to Saturday. The prison van drops him off at 9 o'clock in the morning and collect him at 6 o'clock in the evening, and he works mainly doing the brass in the church. He will do the garden up at Minster, do the gardening here, and keeps the house clean and tidy for me. Yeah,
that's a lovely story, and it seems to me that the priests these days should not only be spiritual leaders, but also effectively they become kind of social workers.
Probably not social workers, but befrienders, exactly. And they're not just seen as spiritual leaders; they're seen as part of a large family. I mean, last Friday week, a lady was dying and her husband sent for me. So I anointed her, gave the last rites. She wasn't able to communicate, but she could indicate to me that she was happy about it, and died that night. And since then, her husband told me that's what's made her day. She wanted to die, and she wanted to die with the blessing of the church, and I was in the right place at the right time. So that was great, yeah.
What a lovely guy, and he was telling me that one of the things he also does, in addition to all his other duties, that he is a regular contributor to Sheppey FM. And now that we've established this knowledge we have of Sheerness and the diversity of the community and some of the challenges they face, it's a good time, I think, then, to introduce to the programme how we in community radio can help with some of those significant social challenges. Tell me about your training. Give me some examples of how you go about training and what are the outcomes.
We work with the colleges, we work with the local school, Oasis Academy, because, you know, we have all the sort of things in place. We'll work with specialist schools like Trinity College in Rochester, places from Ashford and Maidstone, and they have their special additional needs. We make our training courses very flexible so that all abilities can get something out of it. The ones that can achieve a little bit more, we will take them on to do their arts awards, bronze awards, gold, silvers. We've just won recently some triangle awards, which again goes across Kent. We've also just won two community radio awards for two of our youngsters. And it's very, very much one-to-one. We find, and it's a bit depressing, but we find a lot of youngsters these days have low self-esteem, no self-confidence. They tend to isolate themselves, perhaps in a sort of a computer world. They're losing these communication and social skills.
Let's dwell on that for a second. You mentioned because of, you know, technology and people losing themselves in a kind of e-land or computer world. Mm. Are there any other conditions, do you think, as being part of being young now in 2017, that contributes to that sort of sense of isolation and not thinking well of yourself?
I think things have changed. We were discussing the other day that nobody really now has a family doctor that knows them and knows their family. People don't talk to their neighbours as much as they used to. People are all very, very busy and getting on with their own lives. Life seems to go at a very fast pace these days. And I think the youngsters as well have pressure on them to do their SATs and do their exams. Sometimes of the exclusion, I feel, of the social side of learning of life as well. Then there's also the aspect that as they get older, well, there's no job, so what do they do? And then they can't afford to buy a house. So I think sometimes the prospects, you know, in their future look a bit daunting for them. Whereas I think maybe back in our day, things were a little more carefree and we probably were allowed to enjoy our childhood. But I think the youngsters these days seem to be made to grow up very quickly.
And does that lead then to a sense of have and have not? So if you're, you know, maybe you come from a family that cares and maybe you're going to be able to cope with that pace and those pressures on children and young people that, as you say, were less apparent in times gone by. But does it not also then enhance that feeling of isolation that maybe if you can't keep up, you kind of drop out totally?
Yes, I agree. I do think there is an aspect that once upon a time, the woman, the mother, would stay at home and be with her children, and she was that support. She was there when they came home from school, and she was sort of nurturing. But unfortunately, nearly everybody these days, both parents need to go to work, so therefore the children come home from school and mum's maybe not there, or when they come in they're tired. And I think that's another pressure on the whole family unit, really. I was lucky I had a very supportive family. I think it's made me grow up to be quite feisty and, you know, knock me down and I'll get up again. But I see the fragility of some of our youngsters and they get knocked down first time and they can't get up again. And I find it really sad. And that's one of the things that we achieve the most here is it's not about the qualifications that we give to the youngsters, although that is obviously good for their self-esteem and they feel they can achieve. But I think mostly when we see them come in and they're sort of very scared little mites, you know, won't say boo to a goose. And very quickly, with the friendliness and the support of the people here, we get them talking and they come out of their shells and they go on to gain that confidence. Several of our youngsters that came to us were absolutely petrified to even speak on a mic. They've now got their own shows. They've now gone to university. That's the joy for me.
When I was here yesterday, I spoke with Jack, and let's hear from him now.
Hello, I'm Jack Bean. I'm a presenter here at Sheppey FM. I recently won a Gold Award for Volunteer of the Year at the Community Radio Hub 2017.
Well, many congratulations. What did you do that was particularly outstanding to get that award?
I think it's just the sheer amount of effort I put into the radio project here. I have disabled family at home, which I also look after, and I commute to university due to that. And I absolutely love the radio station, so I put as much effort in as I can. I do whatever odd job needs to be done at the time, whether it comes to programming onto the system, cleaning or managing the website, things along that nature. I just do absolutely as much as is asked for me because I want to put in as much to the station as it has given me, which is buckets and buckets.
That sounds nicely phrased. That sounds like one of the reasons you got the award then is you're not only volunteering, but you're actually doing things here at the station that is of use to other people, rather than perhaps, this is going to sound harsh to other people, I don't mean it to, but you know, a lot of people in it just to flatter their own ego a little bit when they're on air, but it sounds like you're going the extra yard.
I do believe so. A few people here have mentioned that you get presenters who hog the desk, per se. They just, it's all about me, whereas something I have always done is I've encouraged people from the local college and recently my university even to come down and experience it with me and help them grow as well, give them a chance to go into the radio, and most of them seem to enjoy it as much as I have, so I want to keep giving it and I want to give volunteers a chance to...
So I get that you're giving, and that's absolutely fantastic, and I'm not at all surprised to hear that you got the Gold Award in the volunteering category. There's also personal gain, isn't there, in volunteering, and that's about skill development. You're a young person, you're at university. The skills that you've been developing here, what do you hope to do with that?
Well, one of the main things I'm studying at university is radio. I'm undertaking film, radio and television studies at university. I'm specialising in radio, so obviously I'm gaining experience here is overlapping very, very nicely with that. However, the main thing Sheppy FM has given me is simply confidence. I'm happy now to stand here and talk to you. I wouldn't be able to do this when I was 18 or 17. And many of the managers here, Julie and Mick included, they've dragged me out of my shell kicking and screaming and made me into the person I am today. Mick once said I came in here with the personality of a wet tea towel, and I've grown, and I really feel as if I've learned how to talk properly. I don't stutter as much as I used to, despite what I've said in this interview. I just am able to carry myself with the weight now, as opposed to just kind of drifting from room to room, being, you know, a little small guy who's kind of talking like this and not really so self-confident, you know?
Well, listen, great talking to you. Thanks very much for that. Keep in touch with the Third Sector podcast, and best of luck with both your time here and at university as well.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
A great example there, Julie, of the kinds of work you're achieving. And I think with Jack, it's a classic example of somebody who has the willing to drive himself, and you have facilitated an environment for him to get on, really. We've established in our conversation some of the acute social needs, particularly in young people. Tell me another specific example of a training initiative that achieves resolving some of those difficulties.
Well, we work with Oasis Academy, and we work on sometimes specific projects with them. So they might be doing, the school runs a dementia awareness cafe, which is really, really good. The youngsters get together and they converse with people that have dementia and things. And it's a good sort of multi-generational project. So we did a project again with some of their anti-bullying ambassadors. We've done some with their dementia awareness students, and we've recently done another one with their history students, where they were doing a show on World War One, and they had to do their research. We helped them put the show together, but when we do our training, when we work with the students, we're only here to show them the technical side and how to do the presentation or the hosting. The research and the prep must come from them, and the design. So they work individually, they work as groups, teams, in pairs, and they go away. And this particular World War One show, the students were amazing, and they found letters that soldiers had sent home relating to the island. And it was quite a tearjerker. And we have a war memorial here where certain names have been omitted, and they found the names and they read them out. And everything else. It was a very moving show, and they played very sort of old music, and we brought in some sound effects, and they all got something. What we say is they all got something out of it. We also work with work experience. We get a lot of youngsters sent to us that are NEETs or, again, additional needs. And sometimes I get a bit cross, and I feel that sometimes these organisations or these educational bodies, they just send you these children in order to, or youngsters, to tick a box. That's their job done, and that's it. Where we feel a lot more passionate about that. We get these youngsters come back to us time and time again.
Tell me about how you fund this place. It's the big question, isn't it? As I go round visiting different community stations, funding is the key issue, because although we are largely a volunteer-based sector, and you will be largely a volunteer-based organisation here in Sheppey, we still need funds. You know, premises has to be paid for, electricity bills have to be, etc. So what are your needs, and how are you going about achieving those needs?
I think probably like every community radio station, we worry. We suffer. We could never sort of sit back and be complacent. I write funding bids. Again, I think that's why you need this evidence to show your outcomes. And we're very lucky with funding. In fact, Swellborough Council, the councillors are actually quite supportive as well. We do get income from advertising and sponsorship. That is growing. Again, when we were on internet only, we did have local businesses that paid to advertise with us or sponsor a show. But it wasn't because they thought they were going to get massive results. It was because we have a reputation of the kind of work that we do for giving local disadvantaged people those opportunities. And we have a lot of respect for that on the island. So people were actual businesses were actually paying to advertise with us, mostly to support that community ethos. But since the FM, yes, more and more people are coming on. We don't seem to have a problem with it. We do get something from the NHS and from Kent County Council because of our health projects and things, and that's all in partnership with Sheppey Matters, which is the charity that governs us. Training used to be exceptionally good, although our local college has now experienced extreme financial pressures as well. They've actually stopped running their IT and media courses. Luckily, we've still got colleges coming in from further afield. So it's not the big wedge that it used to be, which is a shame. But as I say, it's just the pressures on the colleges and things. We do donations, our road shows. We go out with our roadshow trailer. People pay to put their business logos on our trailer. That's £100 per logo per year. So that's another little help. And we do ask for a donation for our road shows. People can be kind. Some people will give you £100, £200, depending on how they feel. We don't ask for a set amount. We just say we're a charity. What would you like to give us? So there's lots of little things. We sell our T-shirts. We sell our mugs. We sell our car stickers. But then each month we give back to the community £10. So they buy their car stickers for £1. If we spot it, our roadrunners go around. We spot the car and we give them £10 cash. It's just a little something. It's better odds than the lottery. So
I think what you're working out there is that successful community broadcasting does need a kind of multi-revenue approach. It's quite clear your links with education. It's impressive, and I'm loving what I'm hearing from you, Julie. One of the themes of this particular tour, though, is I'm trying to identify how community radio stations, which are strapped for resources in so many ways, how are you resourcing getting advertising and sponsorship? You've mentioned that one of your offers is that businesses want to support the kind of ethics of what you're doing and probably want to be associated with that. But there's also a completely different kind of offer. It is come to us because we've got listeners and we can access your customers for your products and services. How are you going about maybe attracting that side of the commercial community?
Well, we have spoken to local businesses. You know, we've actually spoken to a local garden centre and they said, oh, we're going to, can I say, one of the larger commercial stations. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, it will go right across to Essex and Surrey and it will go everywhere. And I said, but that's not the point. Who is going to drive from Essex or Surrey for a garden centre that's here on the island? I said, because they'll pass, you know, a dozen or more on the way. So I said, your target audience is here, local people, and that's who we reach. So I'm saying to the local businesses, we're singing from the same hymn book. You know, you want local business and we're advertising to local listeners to bring the two together. And it does seem to succeed. Again, I think really important is that the community radio station has a good reputation because people are more inclined to help you if they think you're a really good bunch of guys at helping the community. We keep our prices low because local businesses, as I say, we're in a very impoverished area and they can't afford silly money. So we work out something that's sort of financially viable for them and us. And we offer them other things. We offer them links to our websites. We offer them that we'll take their business literature, which we display when we do our road shows. So we build up a really good rapport with them and we do anything that we can to, you know, customer satisfaction is paramount, really.
And I think that's an interesting point because it's not only about attracting sales, but you've got to maintain those portfolios, haven't you?
And keeping them, yes.
Well, roughly what proportion of your revenue comes from those, what Ofcom would describe, commercial sources?
I think our largest percentage at the moment, bearing in mind we're a new radio station, our largest percentage at the moment comes from funding and grants. So we don't have that sort of 50% problem at the moment. But we still have enough. But as I say, we've only been on FM for 6 months. And already you can feel things spiraling upwards and the demand coming in, not only from the community's demand with, you know, footfall increasing, everything increasing, phone calls, but the interest from local businesses. I am so busy at the moment that it is my failing that I don't have a lot of time to go out and do a hard sell. But I'm lucky in that actually advertisers are coming to me, which is a godsend because of my time manipulation, really. But I think it will be the next thing that we will look at is really sort of persevering and bringing in that revenue and building that up next.
I'm interested to know a little bit more about your governance structure. I think we defined success in community radio, people who are sustaining or even growing their organisations whilst fulfilling their key commitments. I think you've articulated that you are very much doing that. You are a mover and shaker. It's quite clear that your energy is largely behind this place, but it cannot just be about your own position here. Who else has positions of responsibility and how many volunteers you have?
The actual structure is that a large charity on this island, which is called Sheppey Matters, they've been running for 23 years. They are funded by the NHS and in partnership with the NHS and in partnership with the Kent Health Strategy Health Policy. They are established in the Healthy Living Centre, which is next door to us, and they are our umbrella charity. Then underneath it, they have various projects. So one is the community chef who goes into the schools and teaches children about healthy living and sort of how to eat on a healthily on a budget. And he's just actually won in Bristol the BBC Cook of the Year. So that's a real nice accolade for him. So that's one project. He also works with people to give them apprenticeships and work experience, and they get qualifications. So that's another good project. Another one is they do disability youth clubs, activities. They do filmmaking, photography. They do baby things. They do sexual health. And then there's our project, which ultimately is the media centre, which is here to network and to engage with the local community. And then Sheppey FM is located in here. So it's all part of the same thing. Then with my volunteers, if I don't count the children, who are volunteers, if I don't count the children, I've probably got about 50 volunteers. Some do have additional needs, which is fine. We always say that we are not trying to sound commercial in that professional way or to be like one of the bigger stations. We are local, we're ground roots up, and we give people opportunities that they wouldn't usually get, and we're happy with that.
Do you have any idea about how many people are listening?
Very difficult to work out. We try to engage by phone calls, texts. We are averaging monthly 50,000 hits on our website. Not saying that's all listeners, but you could say a fifth of that is. Who knows how that works? But we do have a lot of our presenters that actually stream as well. So they're doing a live feed as they're live broadcasting. That turns out to be very, very popular. On our Saturday Night Club Classics, JT and Darren were getting sort of 3,500 people watching them in a session. And quite uniquely, on the island, we have a large Polish community. And so we cater for them as well. And we have two Polish presenters on a Friday evening called Marek and Lukas. And they do their show totally in Polish with a really, really good mix of Polish music. And their last stream last week reached 27,000 people listening and watching. So we're quite pleased with those figures.
You're a thriving organisation. I knew that anyway because we've met before, and it's wonderful coming to visit and see the evidence for myself and having this conversation. A couple of things from a national perspective. Do you think it would be helpful if there was some sort of basic level of competency certificate, which was national, that maybe young people or trainees could work towards, but it would also be something then for their CVs, and also something to maybe take to other broadcasters if they move around the country? That could be community, or that might be the professional networks as well.
I think it would be really good because there are lots of other community radio stations that are working with youngsters, and unless you are giving them like an arts award or triangle award or some other little things, there isn't the recognition of the child's endeavours and what they've achieved and how you've helped them. It would be nice if there was something across the radio industry where there was some kind of level 1, 2, or 3 certification and acknowledgement, because that would be good for the radio industry as well and might also increase uptake from youngsters to do it. Something that they could take on if they did want to have a career in radio. As I say, we've had two of our youngsters that have gone on to university. One is doing sort of like a multimedia with film and radio. The other young lad has always focused on journalism. So for him, it wasn't all about radio, but that was part of his journalism. And he used to do a news feed and things like this. But if he could have gone on with a kind of an award, a certificate of competency or whatever, that's only got to help him get to where he wants to be with his chosen career. So I think it would be good if there was something, you know, like with catering. You know, you've got a food and hygiene level 1 or a whatever 2, and you can build that up. And I'm sure there is in other industries, but I don't believe, I could well be wrong, I don't believe there's anything like that in the radio sector at all.
There isn't, that's why I asked the question.
Yes. Well, it would be a good idea, wouldn't it? Yeah. Be good.
Okay, great. The other thing is, you're quite new at this, but you've really hit the ground running in terms of being a licensed broadcaster. What do you see from maybe the national scene? What are your needs for representation, for instance, with governments or other stakeholders into our sector, such as the BBC? Do you ever think about community broadcasting from a national perspective and what the needs might be from a holistic point of view?
As you say, I'm quite new to this aspect of things, but I think you have the commercial radio stations that are mostly for listeners that are only really interested in just listening to some music of their choice at that level. And I think, I do feel that community radio should be unique and should stay different. I don't think we should try to merge to be like them. I think we should be happy in our uniqueness and retain that. And I think because we reach people, as I say, from the ground upwards, and even larger stations like Radio Kent can only touch on the surface of what's happening in Kent, whereas the local stations, and there's quite a few in Kent now, can go that little bit deeper and I think more personal. And I think, again, with this coming back to individuals and societies that are all becoming very isolated, I think if you've got somebody at home that's a little bit isolated or lonely, to be able to hear personal things that are going on in their community is probably quite rewarding and still makes them feel that they belong in it.
It's very clear, Julie, that you are a driven person, and as I said before, that energy to some extent is underwriting the direction of this organisation. When your alarm goes in the morning, it's time to get up and into the day. What motivates you?
I'm just a lover of life, really. I think we should cherish every day. I'm a very positive person. If something goes wrong, it's a case of what do you learn from that and how do you move on and how do you sort of get better. I am inspired by this project because I have amazing volunteers. I may be the head of this project, but it's my crew that sail the ship, and they are so passionate and so dedicated, and that inspires me. I think what else inspires me is that there are actually so many community champions out there, people that believe in their local community, and they're all striving to make things better, and they're striving to help other people. When you watch the news on the television, it's all doom, gloom, and pretty awful stuff, and it can make you fail to believe in humanity, really. And then when I meet these good guys and these people that are all so, you know, caring and nurturing, and that restores my belief, and that puts a smile on my face. And if a smile was on your face because you enjoy your job, then I'm lucky.
A smile is on your face, a smile is on my face, and I can't think of a finer way of ending our conversation. Julie, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Radio.
Well, I have to say that my microphone will dwell for as long as it needs to when the subject matter proves so stimulating. And this is indeed a bumper issue of the programme because I had such a fascinating time on my visit to Sheerness. My thanks to Julie and all the volunteers who made me and everybody else feel so welcome. But before we have the last word, here's a reminder that if you'd like the community radio tour to visit your radio station, or you have any ideas for the Third Sector show, do get in touch with me, Dom Chambers, at summervalleyfm.co.uk. And just as I was leaving Sheppey FM, I started chatting to the guy standing behind the reception desk, and I just had to record the conversation. And with this, I'll catch you next time on Third Sector on In Radio.
My name is Noel Pritchard, and I'm part of Sheppey FM Radio.
Well, here we are on the Isle of Sheppey, Sheppey FM, and picking up immediately, Noel, from your accent, that you're probably from a different part of the world. How did you come to be here?
Well, it was a long time ago. I came over here back in 1961 to meet my three aunts on my father's side. My father was born in Deptford, South East London, and we were over here for a holiday, 3 month holiday. Then we came back again in 63, and I've been here ever since.
And you're from Australia then?
I am, born and bred.
Tell me why you volunteer here at a community radio station.
First of all, I love radio. I've always loved music, and I love the idea of being able to put something back into the community, helping other people who haven't got the opportunities that I've got here.
And we met yesterday, and I think you told me your age, which is just over 70. You're in your 70s now. How do you see that kind of multi-generation approach that can be such a valuable aspect of a community radio station? You say you like to give some of your knowledge and some of your good circumstances and your luck in life to interpret what you said. How does that help maybe the young people as they're kind of emerging into the world?
Well, it's... Radio is open to all ages. There's no age barrier with radio. The youngsters can get in. They're lucky they can get in at a very early age and possibly have a full career in radio or something to do with radio. But at the same time, it's open for people of all ages, even me.
You are also in charge, I think, of outside broadcasts. Is that right?
I am, yes.
Okay, and tell me what the value to the wider work of this community broadcaster at Sheppey is in engaging the public through broadcasting out of the studios.
It enables us to meet the listeners, and also it enables the listeners to put a face in front of the voice that they hear on the radio. And it's getting everyone, all the community involved as much as we can.
What does Sheppey FM mean to you?
Well, it means a great deal. I've got a lot of friends here. I feel that I'm doing some good. I've got a purpose in life now. I am retired. For a while, I was just twiddling my thumbs, and I didn't like that. I like to be occupied with something or whatever, and this helps me keeping young, and I'm always active, and it's great being part of this brilliant organisation, a lovely group of people down here, all friends down here, like a big family. Yes, I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks very much for talking to Third Sector, Noel.
Yeah, thank you, Don, for inviting me to talk. It's been brilliant.
I love the hybrid of your accent, which has kind of got a bit of East Anglia, but mixed with the Australian. I sort of almost feel, because the sun's outside, we should be going out onto your balcony and shoving a prawn on a barbie.
Yeah. I'm glad you said prawn, because we don't do shrimps. Some people say we put a shrimp on the barbie, but we don't even do shrimps. So that's a misnomer.
Lovely to meet you, Noel.
Same here, Don. Lovely. Thanks very much, Don.
online 24/7. This is the radio industry's very own radio station. In Radio.